Principal Hawk says. The dread that it lifted with that very first kick and with that very first crack, as if that single noise and that single motion themselves had caused all the heaviness to evaporate, now resettles on my shoulders. For about 7 minutes, I was a warrior, a hero, a defender of girls, or one girl, the only girl who matters. I was not David Drucker, class loser. Both of my parents are here, which means this is serious. Usually it's just my mom who comes, who hears these "what are we going to do with you" speeches. Usually they end with me promising to try harder, though I never really know what I'm promising to try harder to do. Be normal, I think. Be like the neurotypical, which is another way of saying everyone else. Be less like me. I no longer want to be less like me. I don't think we need to do anything, I say, and as I speak, I realize my tongue is swollen. Someone must have snuck a punch to my mouth. I don't remember the specifics of the fight. It was all action and reaction, autopilot, no thinking, a clean, quiet brain. Later, I will take the time to reenact it in my head, figure out all the sequencing, savor it a little. Immediately afterward, when my thoughts came rushing back, I smelled blood and heard shouting, and all I wanted was to take a shower, to be free of other people's bodily fluids. I was merely acting in self-defense. I even gave Meat Boy a first warning, which I thought was incredibly generous. "Meat Boy?" Principal Hawk asks. I shrug. I have a 50-50 chance of getting his name right. He's either Joe Mangino or Sammy Metz. Not that it matters. Both got hit eventually. "The first guy I kicked," I say. "We have a record of death threats," my mother says, "on David's cell phone. This was obviously self-defense." "Three of our students had to go to the hospital," Principal Hawk says. "That sounds like more than self-defense." "With minor fractures," my dad chimes in. "Minor." "I can't condone this sort of violence," Principal Hawk says, and I don't know where to look. I hadn't expected my dad to speak up or to defend me. He usually lets my mom do the talking, but then again, he's the one who taught me self-defense. "Tell me, what was my son supposed to do? The entire football team was lined up waiting for him. They've previously accosted him in the cafeteria. Do you need me to read you the texts?" my mom asks, and grabs my phone from my backpack. "I don't think that's necessary." "You little shithead! I'm gonna kill you," my mom reads in a flat tone. "Die, retard. Do us all a favor and die." "She can keep going. There are plenty more," my dad says, like my mother is reading a grocery list. "Eggs, bacon, strawberries. Die, die, die." I need her to stop. I want to slip on my headphones. I want to flap my hands. I do neither. I try to appear as normal as I can while holding a bag of foul-smelling ice to a blue, throbbing nose while I think about Kit, who smells nice and whose nose is perfect. Not too big, not too small, just right. She's a Goldilocks of a person. I don't remember seeing her after that first kick. Did she like it? Me defending her? "Please, Mrs. Drucker, we've discussed in the past the possibility that this school just might not be the right fit for David, that there may be somewhere else better suited to his needs." This is the first time I've heard this, and the insinuation that I might be transferred hurts even more than her use of the word "needs." I don't look at Principal Hawk. I am folding in on myself, smaller and tighter and smaller and tighter still, until I disappear. I want to be something that can't be seen at the molecular level. I cannot transfer schools, Not now. Not after Kit. Since I can't put my headphones on, I force myself to imagine what they feel like. I play pretend. Feel the weight of them. The quick vacuum seal when they first envelop my ears. The rush of white noise on the Relax Little D playlist that Miney made for me before she left for college. The slow filling up of my body by the neutral sounds.
Principal Hawk, shall I start reading again? Because I think if you take a step back and look at the situation reasonably, my son is the target here. He's not the one who has acted inappropriately. Your beloved football team ganged up on him.
My mom is practically spitting. She's angry. I know this because she has a vein 3 millimeters to the left of the middle of her forehead that throbs when she's mad. Miney taught me that trick, and it has proven a both helpful and reliable guide to my mother's moods.
No doubt those texts are inappropriate, and we have a zero-tolerance policy to bullying at this school. But we do need to put this all in a larger context. There was provocation.
Are you kidding me?
My mom explodes. Her entire body is shaking, and my dad puts an arm around her to keep her from spinning right out of the room.
That notebook was private. It was stolen, for God's sake. I don't understand what's going on here. It's your job to protect my son.
But don't you see? I am trying to protect him. It's not just the football team. Obviously, a lot of the kids have trouble with David. I want to keep him safe. Principal Hawk's voice is misleadingly calm. I want to float away on it, but I know I can't. I need to be here. If I don't focus, I will find myself at that school for kids with special needs, where they don't know what to do with someone who takes a course load of 5 AP classes. How will I explain in my applications that I was forced to transfer mid-junior year? I will not get into college. I will never escape Mapleview. I will be the loser everyone here expects me to be. No. Maybe he'd be better off, happier even, in an environment where he'd make actual friends. Last time we spoke, just a month ago, you said he needed to get involved in the school community, my father interjects. He's joined the Academic League, and he's doing a guitar showcase in a few weeks. He has a social skills tutor. His grades are stellar. For a moment, I almost object, since I have no intention of doing a guitar showcase, and I'm not sure if I'm still part of the decathlon, since I missed the meeting last week. Due to my being incapacitated and therefore unable to attend. But then I get caught on the first part of what my father said. Last time we spoke. My parents talk to Principal Hawk on a semi-regular basis? Also, what social skills tutor? I appreciate that, I do, and there is no doubt David is doing phenomenally well when it comes to academics. That doesn't change the fact that I now have 3 kids in the hospital.
Who put themselves there, my mother replies.
I keep my mouth shut, use all my willpower not to say it out loud, to claim what is mine. No, I put them there.
Kids who are socially isolated do scary things, Principal Hawk says. And for maybe the first time in my life, I understand the implication.
She is suggesting I'm one of those crazy people who could end up committing a mass shooting. I hate guns.
You misunderstand me, Principal Hawk, and the very essence of my personhood. I don't believe in violence unless it's for self-defense purposes. In this case, I was provoked. I gave a first warning. I followed all the rules of fair combat. I was left no choice but to protect myself. I could have died otherwise. And I'd like you to know, I am not socially isolated, which is one of the indicators for that sort of antisocial sociopathic behavior. I am now friends with Kit Lowell.
Excuse me?
Kit Lowell is my friend, We sit together at lunch every day. I say, and maybe there's a little too much pride in my voice. I don't care. It feels as good to say this sentence out loud as it did to kick Meat Boy in the face. If the concern is I don't have friends, well, I do. Kit. And maybe Jose, too, though I find the fluorescent rubber bands on his braces to be a confusing choice. You're friends with Kit Lowell? Principal Hawk asks, and even I can detect the disbelief in her voice. Yes, I am, I say, and she's friends with me, too.
Chapter 24, Kit. For the past 15 minutes, I've been debating whether to knock on the principal's door. The thing is, this is all my fault. If I hadn't sat at David's table, Gabriel and Justin would never have stolen his notebook. And if they hadn't stolen his notebook, the football team would not have decided he was enemy number one. And also, it wasn't until they mentioned me, or my ass to be specific, that David went ballistic. I'm sure David can work this into some complicated algorithm, but the fact is, this is on me. Let's be honest. Other than my mother sleeping with Jack, pretty much everything else is. But when I hear Principal Hawk ask, "You're friends with Kit Lowell," all condescending and disbelieving like that, like she thinks that I'm some imaginary friend that David has made up, I decide I have no choice but to waltz right in. "David and I are friends," I proclaim as I push open the door a tad more dramatically than I intend. And this wasn't David's fault. It was mine. Only after the words are out, when I see David and his parents and Principal Hawk look up at me in shock, do I realize that I'm being totally inappropriate. Then I think, could this hurt my chance of getting into college? Never have I felt more desperate to leave Mapleview than I have in the past few weeks. "I'm not sure this involves you," Principal Hawk says to me. If I were smart, I'd walk out. I'd go home and pack a bag and move to Alaska, or Hawaii, or Paris. So what if I don't speak French? There's nothing left for me here. I seem to be blazing all the freaking bridges at once. Even I'm getting sick of my morose teenage girl shtick. It's time to molt and shed this version of myself. Maybe I'll even get rid of the name Kit, which is too close to Kitty, my dad's name for me. Now Kit feels too loaded. I could go back to being Catherine, or try out something altogether new, Kath or Katie, just K, a mysterious initial. The thing is, it's my fault, not David's, I repeat. I'm doing this, barging into the principal's office and making a case, which isn't my case at all. This isn't even about me. I'm a side note to this story, the part you skip over to get to the good bits. "Kit, this isn't your fault. But see, we are friends. What Kit just did is the very definition of friendship," David says, and turns back to the principal. "We don't have to do anything with me." David puts the "we" in air quotes. "I'm doing just fine. I've made friends, just like a normal person, and you should value me as a student here as much as you do the football team." "We do value you, and no one said you aren't a normal person," Principal Hawk says, countering with her own air quotes around normal person. If David's entire life did not depend on this meeting, I'd laugh at their finger talking. "Actually, that's exactly what you've been saying. You're implying he doesn't deserve the protections you give every other student and that he doesn't have the same right to be here," Mrs. Drucker says. And for the first time, I take a good look at her. She looks just like Lauren, but older. She's beautiful. And I wonder if that's hard for David to have such a beautiful mother like it is sometimes for me. But then I remember he's like Lauren, stunning too. And anyway, I imagine it's different for a guy. Though my mother and Mrs. Drucker are equally attractive, what Justin would call MILFs. They have very different styles. My mom likes glamour and general badassery, tight clothes and high heels. Mrs. Drucker sports a loose-fitting peasant top, faded cuffed jeans, and gray Converse sneakers. She looks like she could practically be a student. Her hair is even pulled back into a messy ponytail, all jaunty and exuberant. Unlike my mom, Mrs. Drucker doesn't seem to try. In fact, it's like she's actively not trying. You've been suggesting that he go to a special school. David does not need a special school, I say. I keep my voice calm, but really, I feel like screaming. I can't take it anymore. The whole world is upside down and no one else seems to notice. The football team threatens to choke David with his own balls, and he's the one who might have to transfer? My dad is dead. My mom is alive. And so am I. So am I. Why can't I shut up? Kit, would you excuse us? Principal Hawk asks. Maybe I should pack a bag and go to Mexico. Mexico is a more logical choice, since they speak Spanish, which I kind of know, though I suspect I might speak it with Señora Rubinstein's same New Jersey wine, and I could drink margaritas there on the regular. I've never actually had a margarita, but they definitely seem like something I would like. My dad spent 6 months living in Oaxaca after college, and promised he'd take me there one day. Maybe I should just take myself. Poof. Disappear. Just like he did. I wonder how long I could get away with using my mother's credit cards. Would it be long enough for the world to right itself again? No. I've been wrong. Time isn't the issue. The world will never be right again. Can I just say that David is awesome and he shouldn't get in trouble for this? Please, get back to class. Again, no one asked for your opinion.
With all due respect, let the girl talk, David's dad says.
He's wearing khaki pants and a blue polo shirt, echoes of David's old uniform. When David wore it, he looked like an electronics store stock boy, the person to ask about the best TV. His dad looks like the manager. Principal Hawk reflexively defends herself and says, I'm just trying to keep this private, but then changes her mind. Kit, go on. Think about it. It's not David's fault he got his notebook stolen. It's mine. I made him a target. And it's because of the notebook that the whole school hates him. Don't get me wrong. He is no way normal. I stop. Look at David. Smile a little. Sorry, it's true. But who is? And since when is normal a requirement for high school?
I like her,
David's dad says to no one in particular. I know, right? David's mom says. I hear you saved the day. Lauren, aka Miney, says to me as she slides into the booth at McCormick's. She doesn't introduce herself. She's Lauren Drucker. She doesn't have to. David's parents are taking us all out for burgers to celebrate, though David and I have to be back to school before the bell for physics. Not really, I say. Lauren looks me up and down. I'm wearing jeans and a flannel shirt and ankle boots, an outfit my mother bought for me since she's better at getting dressed than I am. Lauren looks cool, even with chipped sunglasses on her head and messy hair and clothes. I'm too intimidated and embarrassed to ask her how she pulls it off. Mom said that because of you, David's not getting expelled from school. I don't know. I think David was the one who kicked ass today, I say. Literally and figuratively, David says. I've never seen anything like it. He was like a kung fu master.
Krav Maga, mostly, with a few traditional karate moves, David says.
But you had his back. I dig that, Lauren says, and the part of me that still hasn't outgrown the insecurities of freshman year gets a thrill from her approval. "To Kit," David's mom says, and the entire Drucker family raises their milkshakes and toasts me. Later, when we are leaving the restaurant and David's mom stops to say hello to some lady she knows, and David and his dad are debating whether it was fair of astronomers to demote Pluto from the status of planet, Lauren pulls me out of earshot of the rest of her family. "I owe you a big thanks," she says, "for getting the notebook back, for talking to the principal. Seriously, it's hard not being at school to help him. I really hate being so far away. So thank you for stepping in. I didn't realize how much I'd miss him, or here, actually." "You don't have to thank me for being David's friend," I say. "I like hanging out with him." Lauren's eyes narrow and then widen again, and for a second, I wonder if she's tearing up. "You're right," she says. "He's good people. The best, actually. Just one more thing, though," Lauren says, putting her hand on my arm to stop me from walking away. I notice that her feet are encased in unfashionable men's furry snow boots, which somehow look fashionable on her. How does she do that? She's just made of magic. There's no other explanation. "Yeah?" "You're probably good people, too. But just so you know, I love David more than life itself, so if you hurt my brother in any way, or if you even think about hurting him, I will ruin you. I may not still live here, but I can still do that," she says in the hurried whisper of a mafia don, which, come to think of it, is not unlike a homecoming queen, even an ironic hipster version. Her eyes are dry now and cold. "Understood?" "I think so." "Good," Lauren says, and then she throws her arm around my shoulders in a weird, semi-friendly half-hug. "I think we're going to get along just fine." I am at the weekly newspaper meeting, but no actual newspaper business is getting done, because all anyone can talk about is the fight. People are gossiping about it so much it has earned capitalization. "Did you see that headlock move? It was like something out of UFC," Annie says. "I really thought he was going to kill Mangino. Like 10 guys from the football team are in the hospital," Violet says, who, despite being our chief news correspondent, tends not to always hew to the facts. "More like Mangina," says a puny freshman boy I've never noticed before, making the kind of joke that would have been suicidal if Joe weren't a safe distance away in the ER. "How do you learn to do that, Kit?" Violet asks. "I have no idea. I'm only half listening. Mostly, I'm trying to come up with a way to ask Mr. Galto to add my name to nominees for editor-in-chief. Since I'm not skipping down to Mexico after all, I need to get into a good college, preferably one on the other side of the country. I bet I'd like California. Sunny skies, boys in shorts year-round, reading my textbooks while lying out on a beach towel. When I imagine West Coast Kit, I am the kind of girl who can rock a bikini and sunglasses and whose entire existence can be described by the word frolic. In other words, the opposite of who I am now. Mr. Galto, please consider me for EIC. I realize I haven't been as reliable lately, and I missed the meeting, but I've worked my butt off for the past 2 years, and if you give me this chance, I'll do better. Yes. I'll ask him afterward, just like that. He's the type to respond to groveling. Unless we're doing a feature on the fighting prowess of one Mr. David Drucker, which we are decidedly not, I think we need to get this meeting back on track, Mr. Galto says, and I sit straight in my chair and have my laptop out as if I'm poised to take notes, taking position as the model student I used to be. I can still fix this. First order of business, the new EIC. Drum roll, please. My stomach drops. I'm too late. My 3 years of hard work and ass-kissing all down the drain because I couldn't keep it together and was too distracted to ask Mr. Galto to consider me. I had lost track of the timing.
Congratulations to Violet and Annie, our new co-editors-in-chief.
The room explodes in applause, and Violet and Annie squeal and hug because the only thing better than being editor-in-chief is sharing the position with your best friend. I force myself to smile, to pretend I'm not about to cry that I didn't completely and totally self-sabotage. I'm happy for them. I really am. Still, I not only feel like I lost something, but even worse, I've accidentally solidified my position as the odd man out in our threesome, made something I just couldn't deal with at the moment permanent. Violet looks over at me, and though she doesn't say anything, I know she's asking me for permission to be excited about this. I make my smile brighter, give her some teeth. And when Annie gives me a tentative brownie salute, I give it right back. Only later, when I'm back home, locked in my room, hiding from my mother and the rest of the world, and wondering what my dad would have thought about me screwing one more thing up, do I allow myself to cry. For the third time since he died, that seal is officially broken.
Chapter 25. David. Suddenly, people want to talk to me. I'm stopped so often on my way down the halls that I don't even bother with my headphones. I let them dangle around my neck in that casual way like a rock star necklace.
Dude, you're a monster! Yo, man, didn't know you had it in you! Hi-ya!
Enthusiastic sentences are shouted in my face, often with crazy hand gesticulations or faux karate kicks. I even get a few high fives, which I don't think allow for an alternative interpretation other than good job. I'm about 97% sure that none of these people want me to die, at least not today.
You're late,
Jose says when I arrive at the decathlon meeting. I am not late. I am 23 seconds early. Instead of saying this, I show him my phone, which is synced to Greenwich Mean Time to the second.
Okay, fine. But traditionally, we ask that members arrive by 2:57.
Well, then you should have told me that, I say, looking around at the group. There are 7 people here. 2 girls, 5 guys, including myself and Jose. I don't know their names and can't look them up because my notebook no longer accompanies me to school. I appreciate specificity.
Noted, Jose says. What happened to your face?
How can you not already know this? He, like, demolished the entire football team. Joe Mangino, who is officially the worst person in the world, is in the hospital because of this guy.
A kid with a hairstyle I believe is called a mullet says, and then fist pumps the air. Miney does that sometimes, though she accompanies it with the words, "Can I get a woot woot?" I never oblige. I have no idea what a woot woot is. I consider correcting Mullet, since there are probably worse people in the world than Meat Boy, like, say, ISIS members, or even Justin, but I remember that it's rude to correct people. Then again, this is the Academic League, so you'd assume they'd want to get their facts straight.
I cried every day of freshman year because of Joe Mangino, Jose says.
Drucker, our freaking hero,
Mullet says, and stretches his arms out wide.
Meet the team!
A girl with yellow pigtails and glasses and an awesome t-shirt that says, "Don't trust Adams, they make up everything," smiles at me and puts out her hand, which I assume means she wants me to shake it, and so I do. Her palms are cool and soft. I search my brain for her name, but all I can come up with is wheelchair girl. I consider that she may be the second prettiest girl in school, though it's still too early to officialize it, especially because I haven't spoken to her yet. That t-shirt is too little to go on. She must be a senior because we don't have any classes together.
I'm Chloe. On behalf of all of us who have endured much verbal abuse from those guys through the years, and also on behalf of Jose's copious tears, I salute and thank you, Chloe says,
and does a little wheelie with her chair as punctuation. "You are very welcome," I say, and wonder if I'm flirting. Does my ability to banter extend beyond Kit? Probably not, but can't hurt to try, as my mom likes to say.
"Okay, Drucker, we're expecting you to kick ass for us at next week's meet against Ridgefield Tech. The team is all Asian, so they're amazing," Mullet says.
"That's racist," I say.
"I'm Asian, though. I'm allowed to say it. My people slay at this shit."
I don't say anything back, because I don't know if being Asian allows you to say racist things about other Asians. I'm not aware of this carve-out.
"Tell us everything you know about quantum mechanics," Jose says, and then, just like when I drop-kicked Meat Boy, my whole body sighs with pleasure.
"Where have you been?"
Trey asks with a big contradictory smile on his face when I come home to find him waiting on my front porch. He has his guitar in his lap, and his feet are, as usual, in flip-flops, even though he has been presumably stuck outside for at least 17 minutes. I do not like looking at his exposed toes and their sprightly hair patches.
"Oh no, I forgot about our lesson,"
I say, and my heart drops. I never forget pre-scheduled events, but the meeting devolved from academic league prep to a debate about the existence of the multiverse and the mechanics of the time-space continuum, and I must have gotten lost in the conversation. Chloe is surprisingly well-read in the quantum world and knows almost as much as I do. Mullet is an expert in the field of theoretical mathematics. Jose is a history whiz. The whole experience turned out to be stimulating in the good way, not in the Jessica's blonde hair or Abby's perfume sort of way.
"Sorry."
"Seriously? You forgot?"
Trey asks as he follows me inside and upstairs to my room where we practice.
"That's awesome!"
"It's been a big day." I'm rattled. How could I have forgotten my lesson? And why would Trey think that's a good thing? Routine is important. That's why tonight, like every Tuesday night, is pasta night. And also why, contrary to my mother's insistence, risotto doesn't count. If it was a designated Italian night, not a pasta night, she might have a point.
"Your sister texted me about the fight. You okay?"
he asks and points to his nose, which is decidedly less blue and swollen than mine.
"Fine. I heard you joined the academic league. That's rad."
"I assume we'll have to pay you for the full hour, even though it's a short lesson, so let's get started." I play a few chords as a hint that I'd like our work to commence, just in case I am being too subtle.
"No rush. Let's talk a little first,"
Trey says, and puts his guitar on the floor, like we have no need for our instruments.
"We can go over our time."
"Will my mom be charged extra?" I ask.
"Don't worry about it."
I'm not worried, I'm clarifying.
"No, you won't be charged extra," Trey says, and then blows up his cheeks and lets out a deep breath, exactly like Miney does.
Trey swings to look at me. He's sitting on my rotating desk chair. I'm on the bed, and he does this weird thing where he forces me to make eye contact. This technique of his invariably precedes a question that will make me uncomfortable.
"David, why don't you ever ask how I am?"
Phew, I'm relieved. That's an easy one. I thought he was going to bring up his showcase again. Recent out-of-character events like hanging out with Kit and fighting the football team and joining academic league notwithstanding, me getting up on stage with a guitar in front of people is just not going to happen. I have my limits.
"Why would I do that?"
"Because it's polite to ask someone questions about themselves from time to time," Trey says. "We have only 60 minutes a week allotted to my learning how to play the guitar, and I'd prefer not to waste them."
"Come on. We've been working together almost 10 months, and you know almost nothing about me.
whether I have brothers or sisters, what my major is, where I live, how old I am. Aren't you curious?
Not really.
I assumed he was an only child, since all his insistent chattering suggests he is desperate for company. My mother told me he was a college senior, so that makes him about 21. And as for major, he seemed suited for the liberal arts. I'd guess comparative literature or art history.
People like it when you make small talk. It makes them feel like you care,
Trey says. What's your major? I ask, because though I appreciate efficiency, I do not like hurting people's feelings. And now that he's brought it up, I am curious. Could be I have him pegged all wrong. It certainly wouldn't be the first time.
Double major. Math and psych.
He says the last word firmly, like if I were transcribing the conversation, I should put it in all caps. Math and psych. But I'm distracted by his empty neck. For the first time, he's not wearing his conch shell necklace, and its absence and the consequent pale expanse of skin, one more break in our routine, bring on a sudden wave of depression and hopelessness. I feel like crying or lying down in a dark room, which is inconvenient given I'm about to start my weekly guitar lesson. Maybe I'll buy him a scarf for Christmas, cover up his neck, which given his toes is surprisingly hairless.
I wouldn't have guessed math, and if you're a psychology major, I bet you like reading the DSM too,
I say as a thought forms in my brain the same way I burrow into complicated algorithms, Lego pieces stacking on top of each other until they manifest into something recognizable, like pointillism. The wave of depression rolls away and is replaced by a vivid certainty. For once, I understand. 10 months too late, maybe, but I finally get it.
You're not really a guitar teacher, are you? I ask.
What do you mean?
My dad told Principal Hawk today that I have a social skills tutor.
That's you, right? I like to think of our work together as multifaceted, Trey says.
He picks his guitar up off the floor and fiddles with the strings.
I mean, I do teach you how to play, but I also hope I teach you other stuff as well.
I didn't realize. I feel stupid.
Why is it I have to go through life only seeing part of the picture when everyone else gets to see the whole thing? Like my magnification level is set at 15,000%.
I wish you had told me. Then I wouldn't have rushed us through all the talking.
Really?
Well, yeah. I could probably learn guitar from YouTube, but there's nothing on there for how to talk to other kids in high school. Believe me, I've searched, I say.
Okay, then.
Trey puts down his guitar, looks up at me.
So do you have any brothers or sisters? I ask.
Chapter 26, Kit. Sweetheart, open up. I wake to my mom banging on the door, loud and intrusive. My cheek is wet with drool and tears. My eyes feel swollen and heavy to open. I must have fallen asleep mid-emotional breakdown. I'm embarrassed all over again by what seems to bring on the waterworks these days. Small things instead of the big ones. It's not like this is some lifelong dream. This is the Mapleview High Bugle we're talking about. So I'm not editor-in-chief. Who cares? It's not like I was particularly passionate about the newspaper anyway. I'm not like David, who gets carried away with all the things he's interested in, reading college-level textbooks late into the night. I still have no idea who or what I want to be when I grow up. This was simply a way to pad my college application. Nothing more. Leave me alone, I yell. My voice is shaky and sad. It gives me away. Now that my mom senses I'm vulnerable, she'll pounce. This is precisely when having brothers or sisters would come in handy,
someone to share my mom's focus. I'm coming in. She opens the door, using what is apparently a spare key to my bedroom that I did not know existed. Like my happy family, my privacy has been an illusion. I wonder what else is a lie. I do not look up. Do not give her the satisfaction of seeing me like this. It would be better if she just thought I was angry, that I hate her now. This pathetic version of me makes it look like there's room for her to wiggle her way back into my life. I want to scream, "I'm not crying about you," but I don't seem to have the energy. "We need to talk," she says. She sits on my bed and also my toes. Ow! It doesn't hurt, but I don't feel like being mature about anything. "I understand you're mad at me." My mom starts readjusting so she's not squashing my feet. "And you have every right to be. Still, I think you need to hear me out." "No. Kit, no. Stop being a baby," she says, which for some reason makes me snap. I'm tired of playing adult, of trying to be a good sport. I'm suddenly revved up and burning with rage. This must have been what David felt like earlier when he started drop-kicking the football team. I need to learn Krav Maga. "Are you serious right now? I'm the baby? I'm not the one who slept with my husband's best friend. You're a cheater and a liar." "Please, honey," she says, all conciliatory, arms outstretched, as if I am 4 years old and all I need is a hug from mommy to make my boo-boo better, like my words bounced right off her. "Do you have any idea what you did to Dad? He was going to divorce you. He was going to break up our family. That's how much you must have hurt him." I am screaming at the top of my lungs, so loud that our neighbors, the Jacksons, can probably hear me even with their windows closed. "I don't care. I need this to stick. All because you're a big slut." "Kit! Stop saying my name. You don't get to say my name. You don't get to do anything. Kit!" She yells again, but I can't hear her. The anger is too loud and fuzzy, like radio static. White noise on white noise. "I wish it was you who died. Not Dad. You. It's not fair," I say. And then I curl into a fetal position and cry. Because though I have just said the most hurtful thing a daughter can say to a mother, and even though I saw the words land like a punch on my unflappable mother's face, she actually flinched. I feel no satisfaction. Even worse, as soon as the words are out, I realize that they are not true. I loved my dad, maybe even more than I love my mother. But still, despite myself, I need her more. Always have. My mom puts her hand to her mouth, as if she is trying to stifle a silent scream. She's more ashen than usual, pale enough that she's almost the same color as me. And just like that, her composure dissolves. "Oh, God," she says, and then starts sobbing into her palm in large gulps. "Oh, God, you're right. It's not fair. He's really gone, and he died without knowing how much I still have always loved him." "Mom," I whisper, but I make no move to comfort her. I just unfold my body, sit up, curl my knees back in. I'm still fetal, though at least I'm upright. "I get why you're punishing me. I know I deserve all of it, but just know you can't hurt me any more than I'm already hurting. He was my husband, the father of my child. We were together my entire adult life. I don't even know who I am without him," she says, and clutches at her chest. "The love of my life died. He died, Kit. at pretty much the only moment in 26 years when he doubted me. And there it is. For the first time, my mother says three simple words. He died, Kit. And at least that part, the he died part, is the truest thing she's ever said. Why'd you do it? I ask, and the tables flip once more. I'm the one sounding like the grown-up again. Don't tell me you were lonely. I want to know why you were willing to sacrifice everything. She sighs, closes her eyes, and then opens them as if gathering herself. I was lonely. That's not an excuse. It's just the truth. Part of it, anyway. Your dad had his books and his practice, and you. He wasn't the type to say to me, "Hey, honey, you look beautiful." He didn't often even say, "I love you." He just wasn't that kind of man. I knew that when I married him, and in the beginning, I never really needed it. I felt good about myself, not just about how I looked, but about everything, our marriage, you, my work. For years, it all hummed along nicely. It seemed, I don't know, so greedy and American to ask for more than that. Then one day, I looked in the mirror, and suddenly I was 45. And I realized I couldn't remember the last time anyone, including Dad, had paid any real attention to me. I felt taken for granted, like I was invisible, my mom says. You are too young to know what that feels like. At your age, every day is like being center stage. Of course my mom would think that's what 16 is like. In high school, she was a clear-skinned Indian goddess among pasty, pimpled white girls. She was like a Lauren Drucker, not a Kit Lowell. I talked to Dad about how I was feeling, and he dismissed it and told me to get my nails done or go get highlights, which felt so condescending. He said I was making a big deal out of nothing. Things were fine. We were fine. All marriages go through shifts, I don't know. He wasn't hearing me. It felt like more than just a lull. I was scared things had permanently shifted. Middle-aged doesn't mean it's all over, right? I don't answer. Middle-age seems an eternity away. Jack was feeling depressed about his divorce, and Dad thought it would be good if he spent more time with us to cheer him up. Sometimes we'd talk, and he became my friend, too. I really needed a friend then. This life can be so lonely. You have no idea. I want to tell her she's being condescending, but I'm too tired to talk. My anger has curdled into something sour. Suddenly, I don't know why I asked my mother to explain. I don't want to hear about her loneliness, about the truth of adult life. I don't want to know any of this. I want to ask her to stop, but she keeps going. One night, while your dad was away at that dental convention in Pittsburgh, and you were over at Annie's, Jack and I had dinner and got stupid drunk. I don't know. For a moment, it's like I equated your father with my parents. I got that ridiculous adolescent feeling of needing to rebel, needing to shake things up no matter the cost. I made a mistake. One time. Still, one of us should have stopped. I should have said stop. That's not a mistake. That's a betrayal, I say, finding my voice. You didn't just betray Dad. You betrayed me, too, our three-person family, and your explanation doesn't undo that damage. Lots of people are lonely. Maybe everyone is. They don't go around. I know. Again, There's no excuse. We were drunk and stupid and thought, no, we didn't think. We just did. We immediately regretted it, and for better or worse, I told your dad. I had to tell him. I've never not told him anything. And that's when he filed, before I even had a chance to explain. I take a moment to rewrite the story I made up in my head. The old version had my dad coming home early from work one day and finding my mom and Jack in their bed. I imagined tears and punches, soap opera levels of drama. The old version had an ongoing affair, not a one-time drunken hookup. The old version did not leave room for remorse and confession. The old version involved that terrible, terrible word, love.
You're too young to understand any of this. Look at you, my baby. You are too young to have lost your father, and in such a cruel way. You shouldn't have to even know about my ridiculous midlife crisis. You are just too young for all of it. I want to throw myself in front of you. I want to stop all this life from happening to you, but I can't. I just can't.
My mom wipes her eyes.
I know you will judge me, and maybe hate me, and you have every right to. But I love you no matter what. I was stupid and selfish, and one day when you're older, you might understand. I think your dad was beginning to. But for now, I can't ask you to understand. I can only ask you for your forgiveness.
She lifts my chin so I'm staring her straight in the eye. Both of our faces are wet, and our bodies are trembling with pent-up grief and rage and regret. She's not wrong. I do judge her. I do hate her for what she's done. But I also love her, and I don't know how to reconcile those things.
You know the part that makes me saddest of all? I can't protect you anymore. I can't fix this for you. Any of it, she says.
I don't need protecting, I say. I don't say, I forgive you. I don't say, I love you. Instead, I repeat the words again. I don't need protecting. The trouble is, we both know that's another lie, just like everything else. Later, I have a crying hangover. My head aches, my eyes are red and swollen, and my stomach feels hollowed out. With my door closed and my desk chair tucked behind the knob so my mom can't just waltz in, even with her secret key, I take a deep breath. And I decide that if I want to keep my friends, and I do, I better reach out. I dart off a quick text. Me. Congrats on EIC, guys. Really, I should have said it earlier. Violet. What abs, re-EIC. You totally deserved it too, but thanks. Annie. T-Y-K. Violet. You'll stay on the paper, right? Me. Course. Violet. Phew. Hey, party at Dylan's on Friday. You in? Annie. Please say why. Please, please, please. Heart, heart, heart. Heart, heart, heart. Me. Boy Dylan or girl Dylan? Annie. Duh, girl. Me. K. Annie. Bring your BF, DD. Me. David's not my boyfriend. Violet. Maybe he should be. That beatdown was hot. I'm totally #TeamDavid. Annie. TD?
Bring him!
Me. I don't know if he'll want to come. Annie.
For the 11 billionth time, bring him.
Chapter 27. David. At 7:57 a.m. on Wednesday morning, I cross paths with Kit just as we make our way into school. She smiles at me and makes the take off your headphones motion, which I do. If I leave my music on and we talk while walking, I'm pretty sure I can still round the corner to a track change. Your face looks better, she says, wincing. Does it hurt? Not too bad. My right eye is ringed in blue and my lips are swollen, but my nose has returned to roughly normal dimensions. In the shower, I noticed 7 small bruises along my torso, and I'm pretty sure I'll lose my left thumbnail. Meat Boy apparently has 2 casts. He will have to sit out the rest of the football season. I'm not complaining. I have not received a single threatening text since yesterday. For the time being, my peers are okay with me continuing to live. So there's this party on Friday night, Kit says. There are probably lots of parties on Friday night, I say, a line which sounded much smoother in my head than out loud. Well, this particular one is a Mapleview High School party at Dylan's. Boy Dylan or girl Dylan? Kit smiles to herself, though I have no idea why she'd find that amusing. Girl Dylan. Right. I believe girl Dylan has red hair that starts out small and fans out across her back. It's spectacularly geometric. The one with the orange triangular head? I guess, Kit asks. So I'm wondering, do you want to go? With you? To a Mapleview High School party? Yes, with me. To the party. Though now I'm starting to regret asking because you're making this so much harder and more awkward than I thought it would be. I'd love to go to girl Dylan's party with you, I say, quickly accepting before Kit can rescind her invitation. If I didn't know it was inappropriate, I'd do a little dance right here. I suddenly understand the appropriate usage of Miney's can I get a woot woot, because I want 2 of them. A woot, and then another woot, whatever they may be. I'd maybe even add in some lasso arms. Okay, Kit says. Okay, I say, and try but fail to keep my face neutral. Nope. I smile so big it hurts my lips. I slip my headphones back on, round the corner at track change number 3. A good start to the day. I'm at the mall again, shopping for Friday night. Miney has declared this journey a necessity, though I don't understand why I can't just wear one of the outfits we bought last week. I've been rotating my new clothes on a mutually agreed-upon schedule with my mother that allows maximum repeatability by me, but also makes time for bi-weekly washing. The thought of adjusting to more new clothes makes my body itch. Will it be noisy at the party? I ask Miney, since she's a serious party-goer and is therefore an expert. I say this loudly because it happens to be noisy here, too, as we pass the food court, my least favorite part of the mall experience. Too many mixed culinary smells and crying children and people pushing past while carrying an unwieldy number of shopping bags. Yep. Distractingly so? I ask. For you, yeah, probably. But you definitely can't bring your headphones. Will it be smelly? Will there be lots of people throwing up? In almost every teen movie party scene, the heroine drinks too much and vomits on her potential love interest's lap. I like Kit a lot, but maybe not that much. Nah, I mean, it happens sometimes, usually later in the night, but you'll be fine. So put a number on it. What do you think is the likelihood of someone vomiting on or near me at Friday night's party? I ask as we move into the atrium part of the mall,
which has a high glass-domed ceiling and a grand piano. It's the opposite of the food court, empty and open, and the only part of this whole place that I don't hate. The music isn't half bad.